Hey, Terrible Tommy here. We got something for you here. We did an interview with a gal from Holland over, she was in Europe. Called me on the telephone. We had about a 1 hour interview, and I'm going to try to put it on MP3. Her side may be a little muffled because she's probably using a cell phone. But this is Terrible Tommy, and the date is 5/22/22. In May. And so here we go with our little Dutch gal. I don't think she had wooden shoes on, though.
And so I tried to do some research before calling you, but I have, Google everything that I was to know. So now I thought, I'll call you and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, you might just ask me questions. One thing I think we could find out right away, because it's a lot of my older stuff is right wing, and more of my new stuff is left wing. And if you ask me a few questions to determine whether I'm right or left, that would help you on different issues, main issues. What's the difference between the left and the right?
Yeah, if you can answer that question,
Because they always want to put me over on the far right. I don't even know what the far right is.
I'll put you in the extreme. They'll put you in, the place, extreme right people,
No, just put me in Tom Metzger.
Yeah.
Because I have so many.
The road box.
I have so many different opinions on different things that it's impossible, really, to put me in one box.
Mm-hmm. Could you explain to me what made you change from more right to more left?
Well, I've had positions to the left for a long time, not a lot, but I started out as a conservative-type Republican and gradually was in the right wing for many, many years, and I first became, I guess you would call it, more to the left when I refused to pay my income taxes to support the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd find many right wingers that did that.
Mm-hmm.
I fought with the IRS. I lost my house, and I got it back, but it was a hell of a fight. So kept press, or the corporate press, never want to talk about these positions and things I've done in the past.
Okay. Why is that?
I don't know why it is. I guess it's because if you believe in racial separatism and racial integrity, they automatically put you in the on the right side. Now, about 20 years ago, I was told by certain right-wing leaders that I was not acceptable, and I told them that they were not acceptable, and so I left the so-called right wing. I have very little connection with them anymore. I read what they do, and I comment on it, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. And you were for quite a long time.
Pardon?
My youth as well.
Pardon me, would you say that again? I didn't quite understand.
You were in Winnipeg for quite some time at the KKK, right?
Oh, yes. I was the leader of the KKK for 5 years in California from 1975 until 1980. And then I left the Klan at that time and went political and ran for office a couple of three times. And I won the Democratic nomination for Congress in the largest congressional district in the United States.
Yeah.
And received about 50,000 votes. And that actually, I was still classified as a Klansman when I got those 50,000 votes. And then in 1982, I ran for U.S. Senate in Southern California, or in California, and I received about 80,000 votes.
Wow.
I was running against nine people, including Gore Vidal. You know who he is, don't you?
Yeah. again?
Gore Vidal. He was a writer and a very famous guy here in the United States. He ended. He died. He died in Italy.
No, I don't think I've
heard
of him before.
He was to the left, and he wrote some really good historical books on this country that really upset the what I call the conservatives.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And what makes you quit
politics? It's a hell of a job to run for office, and it costs money. I never had much money, and I always ran on a shoestring. The people with all the money were not going to put into my campaign because I damned the conservative right and I damned the left too. I was running as a working class small businessman with racial views, and there were not too many people that were willing to give money to that program. So I decided after a while the whole thing was rigged anyhow. I won that congressional victory, and then I went to the state central committee of the Democrat Party, and they wouldn't let me take my seat. They brought the police in and kicked me out, even though I was a legitimate winner.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Nancy Pelosi that called the cops in to remove me, and you probably heard of her.
No, I have to be honest with you. No, I didn't. You know, politics in America for me, I'm really not into that as much.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. She was very undemocratic to me.
Yeah.
And so I began to see that the game was fixed, even like Trump has said, it's fixed. And I said, I'm not going to waste my time running for office anymore because it just takes too much work and money that I didn't have because I have six kids at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just impossible to do that. And I couldn't compete with the big money people, no.
No, I understand. Yes, very wealthy influencers or people to donate that kind of money to you.
And also you have to promise them something, and they're not going to give you that much money. I was taken aside by the Republican Party, even though I was running as a Democrat. I was taken aside in secret meetings with some pretty powerful people that offered me if I'd switch parties and played their game, that they thought I could win, and they would have furnished me all kinds of money. But that was the time when Ronald Reagan was president, and I did not ever support Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them I would not play that game, and so that was that. That was the end of my political career.
Yeah. Did you feel sorry about it, or was it, you know, you tried to make a stand and you know, you're okay with that?
I was sorry that the people I was trying to help did not understand enough to know that I was on their side, the working class. But I understand that's human nature. Once you understand human nature, nothing surprises you.
Okay. Oh,
tell me
a lesson in human nature.
Well, I believe in positive evolution. I'm not a believer in religion. I'm an atheist, and
mm-hmm.
I believe in survival of the fittest most of the time, and along those lines.
Why do you feel at the basis that has to stay pure? Because if they get mixed, they'll lose in the race, right?
Well, I think it's very important for the white race to maintain itself as a race, not only nationally but internationally. That does not necessarily mean that I'm out to enslave anybody else. It just means that we're a shrinking population, and with the white race shrinking, technocracy and technology and medicine and art and everything else is going to become less. And I'm anti-war. I'm against the wars, and I'm against the military-industrial complex here that we spend $1 trillion a year supporting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't support any of the politicians who support armaments. I'm a student of history, and I know that all the wars were wars that did not have to happen. They could have been negotiated.
You've been in the Army Corps, right, for a couple of years?
My family comes from a working-class background, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, my
mother and father were factory workers, my stepfather. But my blood father was a scientist that worked at Caltech in California, and he also worked on armaments for the U.S. Navy. He was the inventor.
Mm-hmm.
That was my real father.
Okay. And your real father, he left for...
This phone is a little bit muffled, so you...
Okay, you say that my brother left his father, so was he in your life for a long time, or did he leave?
My father left my mother when I was about 2 years old.
Okay.
And went to California and built a new life and remarried and so forth. I have three half brothers and sisters.
Okay. Were you in touch with your father afterwards, or did you...
I became in touch with him after I was got out of the Army and went to California. I moved to California as a single man, and my fiance out there found my father, and I went to see him. So then we did develop an association. It was never a real close father-son association, but we did
mm-hmm.
meet and do things and talk and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a blood band, you know, and it doesn't have to be that you see each other every week, but there's still some kind of...
Yeah, well, we had contact for several years until he died.
Yeah, okay. And you have six children of your own?
I have six children, yes.
Wow.
Five girls and one boy.
Wow, nice. Nice. So you are happy with the boy, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, four of them live in Southern California near San Diego, and two of them live in Seattle.
Wow.
One of my daughters worked for the British government for several years.
Oh, really? So she lived there as well.
No, she's back over here now, continuing her university studies, her and her husband. But they went back and forth to Europe many times. They studied in Germany and other places and studied in England. And then, like I say, she worked for the government there for a while, for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, maybe more.
Okay. And do they have the same beliefs as you do on the left and the right topic?
Well, I really leave them to lead their own life. I never force-fed them into anything. While I was in the Klan, I probably subjected them to quite a bit of that. But later, I used to tell them, think for yourself. I've got a large library. I've got hundreds of books in my library, and a hell of a lot of them, or most of them, are opposite to what I think. And I would tell my kids, go to the library and read yourself and make your own decisions. So some of them are right with me and work with me, and some are not. And one is a Christian, and the others are not. So it's a...
Mm-hmm.
But we all get along as a family.
And is it like, okay, this is maybe a sensitive question, but what if one of your children came home with, I don't know, somebody with a dark skin? Would that be a problem for you?
I've been asked that question a million times.
Okay.
Well, I think they realize that just wouldn't happen. I don't think any of them would try that. I just don't. We've never had that problem. They've all... gone and married with white people, and we've never had any problem like that, so I just don't see that ever happening.
No, okay.
Well, they know what I think, and they know how strongly I feel about the race, and I'd just have to tell them go home, you know, because you know how I feel, and you know how I think, and I've dedicated my life to this. I can't change my position. But not, that's, like I say, it's never happened, but I've been asked that question many times.
Sorry, I'm not really original then.
Well, it's a legitimate question, because kids sometimes rebel and go totally another way, and it's a legitimate question.
But you were in the Army as well for a couple of years?
Yes, I was in the Army. I spent three years in the Army in Germany. I worked in a radio station in Germany. I never saw any warfare or battle. I was a technician.
Okay.
And then I come back and I went to work for Douglas Aircraft in California, working on the missile industry. And I worked in the laboratory there for Douglas Aircraft, and I always had a top secret clearance.
Okay. And how does it make you feel? Because you have some work experience in, let's say, you know, Army or related companies. And yet you say that a couple of years later you didn't pay the tax because of the war in Vietnam.
I regret my work in the missile industry because at that time I was not racial and I wasn't really hip on war. In fact, I was just the opposite. I was, for fighting the war. The first part of the Vietnam War, I supported it. But then I lived near Camp Pendleton, California, the largest Marine base in the world, and I used to go down and sit and talk to the troops, military, the Marines, before they went over and after they came back, and I got a great education on what was going on in Vietnam, and halfway through the war, I said, I'm not going to support this anymore, and so...
Mm-hmm.
So then I said I quit paying the taxes.
Which the government didn't really like.
They said, the woman called me on the phone and said, we're going to audit you. And I said, I knew I didn't really owe them any money, but I said, well, I don't think so. And I thought she was going to pass out on the phone. And, you know, nobody tells the IRS they're not going to do something, you know, so... I took a stand, and I paid for it.
Okay. Is it true? I saw something like you need to pay them $12 million.
Pardon me?
Did you need to pay them $12 million?
You're talking about the civil suit in Portland, Oregon. Point was... It was a setup. I was becoming quite well known and popular. I was on all the television stations around the country, and the Southern Poverty Law Center and these people that their whole thing is about race. They sued me. They got somebody to lie about me, and so took me to court. I'd never been in Portland, Oregon. I didn't know the men that were involved in this street fight where the one black guy died. I didn't know any of this stuff. But yet they were able to have many, many lawyers and a crew of many legal people against I and my son. I could not hire an attorney. They only would work for me for $100,000 cash down in advance, and I didn't have the money, so I couldn't even have an attorney. We were forced to plead our own case, and we had no experience in the law or any legal law school or anything. So you you can see how that turned out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, this is your friend. Do you have any idea by who and why?
Well, it was by the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith working with the Southern Poverty Law Center. They found a young man that had been here in Southern California that went up there to Portland, and he was not involved in the fight where the man was killed, but he knew all about it, and he came back down here, and well, we knew he'd been talking to the police, and he'd come back to Southern California. And he went to a skinhead meeting, he was talking about his situation, and a couple of skinheads roughed him up. And so that made him mad, so he called the ADL, and then the ADL hooked him up with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and then Morris Dees had me in his scope. So I was the only guy that stood up to these people. The rest of the right wing used to, you know, plead out and surrender, so he had me in his sights, and that was it. It was set up. In fact, he made $7 million off my trial. That's a lot of money. The black family didn't get hardly anything that they supposedly sued me, but he made $7 million, and you could check his IRS records for that year. So they make some of these groups pretend they're fighting for the black people, but they're really taking in millions of dollars for themselves.
Mhm, mhm. I have heard different stories about the SDLC.
Yes.
That they sort of create problems, and then they get finance.
Well, when he got out of when Morris Dees got out of law school, guess who his first customer was? The Ku Klux Klan. They don't talk about that he took the case for the Birmingham bus deal where the Klan or people believed in that attacked the bus full of blacks. He took their case, so he don't want to talk about his first case.
Okay. I saw several Ku Klux Klan members talking about the SDLC, and I'm just researching the subject, so I'm not really taking a stand on either side. But I find it the way they put it, I can understand that they see it like that.
They target people who they know they can win against in court because they've got no money. And now sometimes it's legitimate. I mean, I'm not supporting people that go out and kill people. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people that have not done that, and they've gone after. And since they don't have any money and can't hire expensive attorneys, they win. And but Morris Dees, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the last time I checked the records, they had about $250 million in their bank. It's probably a lot more now. And when I contacted the Secretary of State of Alabama a few years ago to ask him about this Southern Fund that's supposed to where this money is, they said they never heard of it. So they do a lot of shady stuff and get away with it because they say, well, we're fighting these horrible racists, you know.
They never go after
the warmongers in Washington and the military industrial complex or anybody like that that are killed. They kill more non-white people than the Klan ever could possibly dream of doing. I mean, when you bomb all over the Middle East, why wouldn't that be a racial crime?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Since you're talking about the Klan now, how was your assignment
at
that? How did you get to the Klan, and why did you...
Well, I'll tell you, 1975, I was involved in the anti-tax movement, fighting the government. It seems like I've been fighting the government all my life. But anyhow, I went to a meeting where there was a bunch of tax rebellion people there, and a friend of mine came in with a young man from Louisiana named David Duke. And David Duke gave a speech, and then the people said, well, we're going to have a meeting up in Los Angeles tomorrow. Why don't you come on up? So I went up to Los Angeles and met up in North Hollywood at the home of James K. Warner, and Duke gave another talk, and he convinced me to join the Klan, which I would have never done. I never thought about that. In fact, when I went home and told my wife, she about passed out.
Okay.
But then I saw we could use it as a political weapon. And Duke was running in a political way, and so I said, well, we'll set this up on a political basis and we'll develop a big organization politically, only it'll be the Klan. And but it didn't have much effect. I thought that when I got 50,000 votes in the primary that I could take that on and build it into something that I called the White American Political Association. But it didn't follow through. I didn't go anyplace. But in 1980, I was tired of the Klan, and plus I'd become an atheist and didn't feel honest staying in the Klan because at least they professed Christianity, and I didn't want to have anything to do with Christianity anymore.
Mm-hmm. A purity that? Or were there some certain beliefs or visions besides being Christian that you didn't feel comfortable with as far?
That's right. And also I no longer believed in having marches and wearing robes and things like that. I said, that's in the past. We don't need that. Of course, I broke with David Duke in 1977, I think it was, because of things that he did.
Did you, are there certain beliefs that the Klan has or had?
I believe.
To incorporate today?
Well, no, I believed in white, of course I believed in white separatism. That's the Klan professes that, and I believe in that. I didn't leave the Klan on bad grounds. I never went against my oath in the Klan, which is simply to support and work and defend the white race, and I believe that now just as much as I did then.
Besides the Christian beliefs that really didn't feel okay for you?
No, I started reading, studying Thomas Paine and a lot of other people, deists and so forth, and I began to see that the religion was our problem. It wasn't the solution. It was our problem, and a good share of the wars in the world have religion as a basis, and I began to see that the Christian religion was not really supporting the white race like it once did, and I said, I'm just going to quit. And I quit in 19...
And now you have war?
Now I have white Aryan resistance, yes. It's race, yeah.
And could you tell me what it stands for? Because you have certain beliefs, right and left. Can you explain to me in a couple of sentences what war is to you?
Yeah, White Aryan Resistance is a racial separatist organization devoted to the best interests of the white race, and it operates on a lone wolf basis of individual people. We don't have a whole bunch of ideas that they have to subscribe to. The main thing they have to believe in is separation and the best interests of the white race and like that. So everybody is an independent person that works with me. I'm not a dictator. I don't tell people what they have to think. I mean, I'm sure we even have some Christians out there that work with us, but I don't ask them what their religion is. Mm-hmm. And so we believe in not doing the things that the right wing does. We don't believe in parades or big get-togethers or wearing uniforms or waving flags. We don't believe in any of that stuff. We believe in individuals quietly infiltrating the community and working within the community, but being also loyal to the white race.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is it, if you say infiltrating, it sounds a little like it's some kind of, I don't know, terrorist act. You know what I mean? It has a certain ring to it.
Well, I call myself an ideological terrorist.
Yeah.
In other words, I use free speech as my terrorism.
Yeah, okay. But it's not meant to, hurt particular people, or it's just meant to keep the white race going.
What it's meant for is this empire begins to crumble all over the world, and things get to be pretty bad economically, that I want people who are going to be able to stand and stand politically, stand in all kinds of ways, including militarily. I mean, you know, I think that the time may come where we're going to have to fight the government, and I believe the government's going to become more dictatorial and more oppressive, and people who resist them are going to be rounded up. And then I don't know when it's going to be, I don't know how long it's going to be, but this government has become so tyrannical that it's bound to happen. So our people should be ready emotionally, politically, militarily, and so forth. But we're not training in the woods or anything like that. Like, I only have about 5 guns that I haven't fired for 20 years. A couple of them I haven't even fired at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it something, because I've read, I didn't read it entirely, but I've read, I think, the first half of Turner Diaries. Do you believe something like that will happen again?
I didn't really like the Turner Diaries, even though I did support the order, the order, Bruce Reagan and Bob Matthews. I did do that. I was one of the few right wingers that did. There's a book, I forget what the name of it is right off. Oh, there's another book called Hunter that was produced by the National Alliance that I support that more than Turner Diaries, because they come out and they're using atomic bombs and stuff, and I hate that idea. I mean, that's ridiculous, and we need to get rid of all the atomic bombs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. But do you feel, I've heard people ex-co-containment and, more right-sided people than left-sided people say there's a racial war coming. Do you feel the same way, or do you feel...
Well, there's a racial war been going on for a long time, and we're losing. That's the point. I mean, the white race is losing all across the board. Look at what's happening there in Europe. I mean, the white race is just laying down and letting them march in. And this was well described in a book printed a few years ago called The Camp of the Saints, to where this was going, predicted this was going to happen. And so, yeah, there's a racial war, and the white race is just laying down and letting them walk over them. I mean, the wealthy, the ruling class don't, because they don't have to worry about it. They can have their islands and have their places where they have refuge. They don't care about the working class.
Mm-hmm.
But the working class has just sort of laid down and let everybody walk on them. And
mm-hmm.
the, work, working class has no apologies to make to the blacks, because in the South during slavery, the white working class were in worse shape in many cases than the blacks were on the plantation. And in the northern industrial areas, they were more, they were just as much in trouble as the blacks in most cases. So we don't make apologies to people of other races. However, I had contact and worked somewhat with the black separatists, like Louis Farrakhan. I was his guest once, and I've spoken to many black separatists who agree on racial separation, especially during the 80s and 90s.
Okay. What strikes me as a little odd is that the government is really opposed to people almost extreme right, but somehow, for me, as someone from Europe, I never hear the government say anything about the blacks discriminating the white.
Yeah, I know.
Is that something you recognize, or is that, you know, totally...
Well, the blacks are very...
missing something.
Well, the blacks are very racist. They exhibit it openly every day. I mean, there is a certain psychology in part of the black race that they hate the white race, and whether for legitimate reasons or not. They blame all the white people for the problems that the ruling class and the plantation owners and all those people, the big business, caused the problems for them, and they blame the lowest common denominator, whites, and so and then the whites, of course, you know, tend to react. So they're being used and by the ruling class, and some of them understand that, but not too many, because you can see that they're all hot for Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton is not a friend of the black race. She's manipulated by the ruling class.
Okay.
And just like Obama, he was manipulated for the ruling class, too. And so blacks are choosing their wrong leaders, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. And how do you feel about the elections and about Trump and Clinton?
I don't vote anymore. I have no confidence at all in the federal government of the United States. I can't vote for people that are spending almost $1 trillion on warfare and bombing people all over the world, 700 military bases around the world. I can't vote for anybody that represents that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for us, you know, we're like an ocean apart, but when we look at the elections, and like I told you, I'm not really into the whole American politics, but I think it's a tough decision. Because it's none of them are really the type of leader you would want for the country.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, all these people that have been running for the last 20 years have been war criminals anyhow. George Bush and Mr. Cheney and all the people that supported the invasion of Iraq, illegal invasion of Iraq, are war criminals, and they should be brought before the world court and tried. Hillary Clinton's a war criminal. Donald Trump wants to be a war criminal because he's talking about beefing up more of the military and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we got a Washington full of war criminals or people who advocate war all the time, I can't vote. I won't vote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I was wondering, because you changed on some topics, and you became what media say far right to more, you know, left.
But the media never says that. They never say I have all these left-wing positions or I'm an atheist or anything like that.
So how do they, if the media would describe you today, what would they say?
Well, they're not talking about me because they call me all the time. They wanted me to be one of these guys that supported Ronald Trump. And I said, no, I don't support any of these people. Ronald Trump is being, he's running as a shill for the Republican Party to build the registration rolls. That's what it was all about. The Republican Party registration was dropping like a rock. So they went to Ronald Trump, and they knew what a showman he was, and he had a lot of media exposure, so they convinced him to run, and so he was able to boost their registration in the Republican Party by millions, and he may very well make it to president, but I don't think they really want, I don't think the Republican hierarchy really want him to be president. They're sort of going along with it. I think that he was designed to get the registration up and then take him out at the last minute through a side door at the convention and disqualify him or something. And well, even if he does become president, he's still under control of the ruling class, so it won't make any difference. And he'll get in there if he does, and he'll just go back to the same kind of stuff that we put up with for years.
Mm-hmm. At a certain area, were you really, you know, looking back, where you can say, well, I really am on there, or that you so fantastic that I to always be said, I don't know, something was the way it was, but now I feel so differently about it.
Well, in the beginning, I was a conservative, but the people that call themselves conservative today are not conservative at all. I say to the Republican conservatives, what are you conserving? I don't see anything you're conserving. You're destroying everything, you know, and whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, the predatory capitalists are raping the world and making hundreds of millions of dollars and living like kings when the big bankers should be in prison. So you can see by talking to me, I think you see that I'm certainly not a right winger.
No, I don't. But the, some kind of label on it would be quite difficult.
But the press only call me when they want a certain type of reaction that they think I'll give them. When the blacks rioted in Los Angeles, they called me and expected me to damn the blacks in Los Angeles. I said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll give them some gasoline and they can burn down the federal buildings as far as I'm concerned. And they never print that stuff, you know. They never print anything. I talked to them for 20 minutes, and then it's never on TV. Because they put everybody in a certain box in this country. If you're extreme right winger, that's all you hear, or white supremacist, you know. And I'm not a, I'm not out advocating white supremacy, because we got a lot of white supremacy, but it's on Wall Street.
Okay. I asked you because they're still calling you a neo-Nazi. They're calling you skinhead.
The skinhead era is over. That's over. I mean, I brought the skinheads really into popularity in this country, or helped do it, because of my connections with the National Front in Britain way back. But the day the skinhead sort of went away about 15, 20 years ago, and I started promoting for them to dress normally, don't wear uniforms, don't wave flags, don't go marching in the streets, get a good education, and get a job in the system, and then be our agent behind the scenes in the system itself. You know, whether it's in the government, whether it's in industry, whether it's in education or whatever it is. And similar to the way the communists operated, with cells all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And even pretend you're something you're not, too. I trained them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But would you still call yourself, skinhead or neo-Nazi or whatever? Is it a type of...
I may be a skinhead, but not by choice. I've lost all my hair. Neo-Nazi is just a media term. What the hell does neo-Nazi mean? There are no national socialists, really, national socialist parties. It's just a media term people hang on to. I tend to be a white socialist. But I'm not a nationalist because we're international. To call me a new Nazi is ridiculous. I criticize Hitler like a lot of other people. I've done a lot of research on Hitler and believe the war was all wrong and the invasion of Russia was a disaster and all of that stuff. I tend to go along with the early National Socialists in Germany. The Strasser brothers and people like that before National Socialism went off the tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's more into building up the country instead of...
Right. No external... Yeah, no external wars.
Yeah.
That was... Well, 55 million people died. I mean, you know, all these wars are just counterproductive. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they never really win anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's definitely not a win-win situation for anybody.
No.
In my belief. But, okay.
And I say most of the people who involve themselves in it are war criminals. And the Nuremberg laws were supposed to be forever. And nobody's been... convicted under the Nuremberg laws since the Germans were. I mean, George Bush should be tried under the Nuremberg trial, Nuremberg laws. Cheney, all those Wall Street guys that financed the war, all these arms makers, they all should be tried in the Hague.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't think that's ever going to happen.
I don't think so either.
No. And are you still connected to Catholic organizations within the Kufstan and all these prisons?
No, I have no contact with any group. I'm totally independent, and I only speak to just independent people. We have no membership cards. We have no meetings. We don't gather together in rallies and so forth. We simply understand the ideology and what we really like and what we really want, and we encourage people to follow that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Without being a leader of that
name. Yeah, we call it leaderless resistance.
Yeah, okay. I'm writing it down. what is Ireland to you mean? Is it like the classic, blonde hair, blue eyes, or is it more to you than just the outside?
Yeah, it's much more than that. Yeah, it's much more than blonde hair and blue eyes. In fact, most Aryans don't have blonde hair and blue eyes. They didn't in Germany even, you know. So I believe in it. Aryan is just another word for the noble ones. That's the definition. I call it the noble ones of our race. I call Aryan. I don't call all white people, even blonde hair, blue-eyed people, Aryan, because they're morally and spiritually not in our camp. They're going against the white race, so they can't be classed to me as an Aryan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw you in an interview, so you're
blonde
hair,
blue eyes, and make you Aryan, because what has he done for the white race? Right.
Yeah, so
do you
still feel the same way about that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I mean, the big problem the white race has today is the white race. we brought most of our problems on ourselves. The right wing, you see, in the Klan and the so-called neo-Nazis, they all the time blame everything on the Jews, everything on the blacks, everything on the Mexicans. And in reality, the biggest problem is within our own race. If we straightened out our own race, these other problems wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm. And so, you mean problems of poverty, of drugs, or something like that?
Well, yes. Much of this problems in society, and I'm pretty much a libertarian on some things. I believe if people want to take drugs, go ahead and take drugs, but you got to pay the price. I mean, if you kill yourself, you know. I believe in, you see, the right wing goes against abortion. I believe, well, I don't think it's a good idea to abort white people, but if white mothers don't want white babies, then they should have them adopted and like that. And I say to these right wing Christians, I say, well, if you're going to keep the babies, then you should sign a contract to finance them until they're 18, instead of just letting society do it. I believe we have a lot of abortion going on in the military. If you're 18 years old and thrown into Syria to be killed, that's late-term abortion.
Yeah. But and I want to see. guys still married, right? You still have a wife.
I have a significant lady that my first wife died. I had been married 25 years, and then I met another lady, and we've been together 20 years. But we're not married.
Mm-hmm.
I find I get along equally well either way.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you have to get married, right?
No, especially when you...
How does she feel about it? Because I can, you know, if it's about...
She feels strongly about the race situation, but she's not an activist. She's not doing what I'm doing, but she, you know, she feels racial.
Mm-hmm. And how does she feel if she reads something about you that's not correct, or if they call you, like on television, the most dangerous man in America?
Well, she lives with me every day, so she knows that most of this stuff is not true. Like, they come up with the most crazy things that say about me, you know, and she knows it's not true because she lives with me. She knows what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm home most of the time. I'm not out blowing up buildings.
Yeah. And what do you, other things that you, looking back, that you regret?
Well, it's hard to, it'd be easy to do that, but the whole thing has been such a learning process that I doubt whether I would be where I am today if I hadn't gone through and made a lot of mistakes and did things that didn't help me that much, but it was all a learning process. So I think that's the way life is. If you try to negate everything you did, you're chopping your legs out from under you because... You had to go through it. I mean, you know, it's like climbing a pyramid. You go up one level at a time, you know, and you learn things and you change. And anybody that's going to do anything, I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, anybody can look back and say, oh, gee, that was terrible. I shouldn't have done that. But I don't do that. Like I say, I believe it's all a learning process.
Mm-hmm.
And without that struggle, I wouldn't be where I am today.
No, I can relate to that, but you know, feeling regret for something doesn't mean you would want to change them eventually. But you know, aren't there any decisions you made, or I don't know, things you said that you regret in the end? I'm not publishing any of this, so.
Well, you know, I can think of things that I would do differently,
mm-hmm.
but I can't think of anything that I can regret because it led me to where I am today. Without it, I probably wouldn't have made it. So I had to, challenging the government was something that I probably should have regretted because they treated me badly, but my defiance of the government has made me what I am today. I didn't start out as racial. I started out as anti the government and the system and the rotten politics and so forth. That's why most of the time up until 1980s, I was fighting the system, you know, politically. I was in two or three different parties. I was a Republican, then I was an American Independent, and then I ran as a Democrat. I ran as a Democrat because I couldn't afford to run as a Republican.
Yeah.
You had to have a lot of money to run as a Republican.
Okay, yeah. And you know, so do you find the government is watching every step, or do you feel that they are in some way bullying you or whatever?
Well, when I look at government today and look at governments around the world, I'm more friendly to the anarchists. I think, I'm beginning to think, who needs government? All they bring us is trouble. I mean, I think we could get along a lot better with smaller institutions of politics based on the state or the county level and forget these central federal governments that always come under control of the super rich.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, one thing I do regret is that the problems I brought to my first wife, raising kids and putting up with all my Ku Klux Klan activity. She was right with me. She agreed with me, but I don't know whether that led somewhat to her premature death or not. But I know she smoked a lot. And I couldn't get her to quit smoking. But I do regret all the stress and stuff I put her through.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of stress?
Well, you know, when the IRS seizes your house and they throw me in jail, I was thrown in jail 3 or 4 times. I mean, you know, women are not usually too excited about things like that.
No.
And then when we lost the case in Portland and they took my house and my wife and I and 3 kids that I had then, we had to walk out and get an apartment, and it's a hell of a load. I mean, especially to a woman. I mean, you know, it's rough for a man, but to a woman, I think it's worse.
Yeah.
But she was a strong woman, and so she handled it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for your honesty.
Sure.
And for wanting to talk to me about it. You know, the personal stuff, but also the political issue. And it really clarified a lot for me. And I'm, as I wrote down, I'm visiting the U.S. next week. And we're looking for, maybe make a documentary about this, or that we're still looking for people to talk to and get some more information
about. Well, that's it, boys and girls, from our Dutch lady. And the quality is not so hot. We'll see if we can clean it up a little bit. But I think we got most of our points across. So that's it for today. And I'll be back with you the next day. 14-5.